The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome to a Monday, everybody. Brand new week, same old shit. I know, you're thinking, why didn't she start the show with, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. Because I think we've gotten to the point where I'd be starting the show every day with that song. Now, granted, I think Cheryl Wheeler wrote an amazing song. And you know what? When mass shootings were, less common than every day, I could do it. I could get away with playing the song whenever there's another mass shooting, whenever we know we're going to be hit again. But this weekend, my God, there were two, or were there three yesterday? I just can't keep track anymore. It is sickening, literally sickening. By the way, we're back on Facebook. Sorry, I couldn't tell you that I guess it was on Wednesday or Thursday. I don't know what it was. Facebook all of a sudden suspended me for 3 days because I posted something. Remember, I did the story about the neighborhood in South Carolina where a young black man, I mean, he was a kid, he was what, maybe 20, was walking down a residential neighborhood sidewalk, and apparently this older white man started harassing him, like, who are you, why are you here, leave now. The only thing that this kid did wrong was walking while black, apparently. And so I reposted the original video that someone, it was originally posted on Facebook, and I editorialized a little bit. I said something about that white piece of shit, the drill sergeant who was harassing this young man, and I guess the white piece of shit is Facebook's idea of hate speech. So I was banned from Facebook for 3 days. That, of course, we know I'm still banned from YouTube. That's going to go on for a couple of months. So it is what it is. If ever you cannot find me, if ever you cannot find me, you can always go to NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. We've got a chat room there. I didn't embed today's video. I usually embed the Twitter stream there. I forgot to today. Sorry about that. I will try to attempt to do it during the show at some point. And you can always hear the audio stream. You can go to progressivevoices.com or go to NicoleSandlerStream.com, and that will get you the live radio show while it's playing, or it should anyway. Best laid plans and all that. But, I'm so sickened by the events of not only this week, but, the last number of years as we've seen gun crimes, gun killings, gun massacres increase exponentially. So I used this graphic one day last week. I shared it. I'm putting it up on the video screen now. And if you're just listening to an audio podcast, I'll tell you it's a CNN graphic. And it says mass shootings in the past month. And it's got a map of the United States, and I believe 45 cities highlighted, from Gresham, Oregon, to Stockton and Orange, California, to Boulder, Colorado, Indianapolis, Indiana, Chicago, Illinois, Memphis, Atlanta, Cleveland, Essex, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Wilmington, Tuscaloosa. I could keep going, and in fact, I will in a moment, because this graphic I have seen pop up in a lot of places over the weekend, and for good reason, because we're in the middle of a global pandemic, right? But our gun problem is an epidemic. Pandemic means it's a global issue. epidemic means it's more local, and it is an epidemic unique to this country, where people have a perverted idea of what the Second Amendment means. The Second Amendment simply means that in the days when they wrote the Second Amendment and the only guns available were, you know, like muskets and, you know, things that you had to load manually one bullet at a time, it was... You know the language of it. In fact, let me pull out my trusty Constitution. Not that I really need it to recite the Second Amendment, but I will, because I don't want to get anything wrong. Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Now, back in this day, we didn't have a standing army. In fact, I think the Constitution pretty much precludes a standing army. The well-regulated militia, in today's terms, I believe, is the National Guard. That's what they're talking about. They're not saying you should have unfettered access to semi-automatic machine guns. So let me share with you a little bit of research I did with help from, where did this come from? I gotta back up. I'm trying to remember where. Oh, CNN. Same people who did the graphic. Duh. So they did a study, sort of a study. They did an analysis, basically. And it seems that this recent spate of mass shootings, of murders, mass murders by firearm began in earnest on March 16th. So just over a month ago, right? Today is April 19th. So on March 16th, 8 people were killed at 3 Atlanta area spas. Remember that? It seems so long ago. It was just a month ago. Since then, when CNN released this article, they wrote that the U.S. has had at least 45 mass shootings. And this is put together with an analysis of data from the Gun Violence Archive, GVA, Gun Violence Archive. If you want to get really depressed, spend a couple hours looking through the Gun Violence Archive. Yeah, it's not fun. So since March 16th, the U.S., has had, they wrote, at least 45 mass shootings. Well, now it's up to at least 50, because this weekend was a busy one. So I want to go through some of them with you, because it's important that we know what we're up against. I mean, because all we talk about, you know, Atlanta happened, right? And then, well, let me go through it. All right. So during the lockdown, for some reason, we didn't hear a lot about these mass shootings, but gun deaths actually escalated over the last year. But we're not going to go through the whole year. We're just going to talk about the last month, beginning on March 16th in Atlanta, where 8 people, including 6 Asian women, were killed when a white gunman stormed 3 spas and shot them up. The very next day, we didn't hear much about this, but 5 people who were preparing a vigil in Stockton, California, Central Valley, were shot in a drive-by shooting. None of them were killed and none had life-threatening injuries, but still, 5 people were shot in a drive-by shooting in Stockton, California. That was March 17th. On March 18th in Gresham, Oregon, 4 victims were taken to the hospital after a shooting in the city just east of Portland. 4 people shot. Again, they didn't die, so you didn't hear about it, because I guess if it bleeds, it doesn't lead. It only leads if they die. On March 20th in Houston, 5 people were shot after a disturbance inside a club. 1 was in critical condition after being shot in the neck, and the rest were in stable condition. That was March 20th. That same night, in Dallas, Texas, 8 people were shot, 1 killed by an unknown assailant. Again, another one, also on March 20th in Philadelphia, one person was killed and another five were injured at a shooting at an illegal party. There were at least 150 people there who fled and believed they had to flee for their lives. It was an illegal party because we're still in a pandemic situation and there shouldn't be 150 people at a party. But one person was killed and another five were injured in Philadelphia. Those are three shootings on March 20th alone. Five, eight, and five more. What is that? A lot. 18 people or something in that one day alone. Okay, let's move ahead 3 days to March 23rd. This one we heard about, when 10 people, including a Boulder police officer, were killed inside a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado, when again, a guy comes in shooting a gun. The same day that Boulder happened, in Aliceville, Alabama, a shooting reported at a home left two people dead and two injured. Again, you don't hear about it because two dead, yeah, that's not enough. Why should we even talk about two people dead? That's not enough to make the news. Seriously? All right. Well, so that was March 26th, Aliceville. I'm sorry, March 23rd, Aliceville, Alabama. On March 26th, we had a few shootings in Philadelphia. Outside of the Golf and Social Club, police say two suspects shot seven people. Great. That same day in Memphis, Tennessee, five people were shot. Three victims were pronounced dead at the scene. Two were taken to a hospital in critical condition, and one was in non-critical condition. The man identified as a suspect was later found dead in a motel in Nashville. Self-inflicted gunshot wound. Again, if you want to go killing, kill yourself first. Okay, do yourself first and then, you know, deal with the other people. If you're stupid enough to walk around with a gun, you're stupid enough to get that. March 26th, that same day that five people were shot, three killed in Memphis, there was another shooting in Chicago. A gathering in Chicago's Wrightwood neighborhood turned into a mass shooting. Two gunmen opened fire inside the gathering, wounding seven people and fatally shooting a 26-year-old man. That very same night in Norfolk, Virginia, four people were wounded. Let's see, the victims, two 18-year-old men, a 17-year-old girl, and a 21-year-old woman sustained non-life-threatening gunshot wounds. But fear not, because there was yet another shooting in Virginia on March 26th in Virginia Beach. Three shootings left eight people injured and two dead. Okay, that was March 26th. On March 27th, four more people were shot in Chicago, this in the South Austin neighborhood. The victims included men aged 42, 53, and 64 who were near a sidewalk when they were shot. This is all the information they're giving us. But again, you see how this, it's almost every day. A few more on March 27th in Yazoo City, Mississippi. At least seven people were injured in a mass shooting in a nightclub. At least six were shot. Another person suffered a laceration. Okay. Also on March 27th in River Grove, Illinois, a shooting on a party bus left three people injured and one dead. Police say the occupants of another vehicle fired at the bus when it stopped at an intersection. You see this? March 28th in Cleveland, seven people were shot at a Cleveland nightclub. Nice. The victims, four men and three women, were all between the ages of 20 and 30. Police believe several people fired inside the nightclub. Lovely. Also on March 28th in Chicago, four people in an SUV were shot on the I-57 expressway. All were taken to hospitals in critical condition. Also on March 28th, a man in Essex, Maryland, fatally shot his parents before shooting three people at a convenience store, killing two of them. And then he finally killed himself. Again, you know, if you want to go out shooting, kill yourself first. That brings us to March 31st. Oh, another one we heard about in Orange, California, an office building. Four people, including a child, were killed, another person wounded at an office complex in Orange, California. Also on March 31st, five people were shot in Washington, D.C. This incident started as a dispute and ended with two people dead and three injured. But wait, we're not done yet, because we're not even through a month. Now we're into April, though. April 3rd, Wilmington, North Carolina. Three people were killed, four others injured in a mass shooting at a house party. Also on April 3rd, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Two men were arrested and charged with attempted murder after five people were injured during a shooting outside an Alabama bar. Also on April 3rd, in Dallas, Texas, another Dallas, Texas, an apparent murder-suicide plot. 21-year-old and 19-year-old brothers made a pact to kill their parents, sister, and grandmother. Lovely. Maybe these people shouldn't have access to guns? Also on April 3rd, in Quincy, Florida, seven people were injured by gunfire near a nightclub after a fight broke out into gunshots. And that brings us to April 4th, when there are no less than three incidents. One in Monroe, Louisiana, where police responded to Bobo's Bar, where they found six victims with gunshot wounds. April 4th, Birmingham, Alabama. An argument between two groups of men devolved into more than 30 shots fired at a park on Easter, killing a woman and wounding five other people, including four children. And in Beaumont, Texas, a man arrived at home threatening several people with a firearm before shooting four of them. The following day in Baltimore, five victims were taken to a hospital with multiple gunshot wounds. The following day in Detroit, one person was killed and three others injured after gunfire erupted from a car. On April 7th, a few more. Rock Hill, South Carolina. We heard about this one because, well, it was a former NFL player who killed six people, including a prominent doctor, his wife, and their two young grandchildren before killing himself. Oh, yeah, there were two workers at the house that he also killed. And that very same day in Milwaukee, a 26-year-old man was charged with the shooting that killed two people and injured two others at a gas station. On April 8th, Bryan, Texas, a gunman killed one person and wounded at least five others, four of them critically, at a cabinet manufacturer. The next day, April 9th, Fort Worth, Texas, one person killed and five others injured when people in two vehicles shot at each other on a Fort Worth, Texas freeway. What are we doing, people? The next day, see, it's every fucking day. April 10th, Memphis. One person was killed, three others injured, including a mother and child, after gunfire was exchanged in a Memphis neighborhood. Also on April 10th, in Koshkonong, Missouri, one people was killed, three others injured, at a shooting at a convenience store. Also on April 10th, Waterbury, Connecticut, police responded to calls of a weapons complaint and found blood trails and four injured victims. Also on April 10th, in Allendale, Michigan, an incident outside a house party resulted in four people being shot and one critically injured. April 11th, Wichita, Kansas, one killed, three injured at a shooting at a house party. There's a theme here. April 11th, Seattle, a toddler and three other people were injured when suspects fired into a business parking lot. April 12th, Chicago, four people were shot, one fatally, and a fifth person was hit by a car in a shooting early Monday on the Eisenhower Expressway. April 13th, Baltimore, police said a dice game turned violent when two shooters opened fire on a group, injuring four. And April 15th, Indianapolis, we heard about this one again because eight people were killed, several others wounded in a mass shooting in an Indianapolis FedEx facility. But there were other shootings also on April 15th. Six people injured in Pensacola, Florida, at an apartment complex by gunshot. Also April 15th, Washington, D.C., four people were shot, including a teenage girl in Northeast Washington, D.C. That brings us to this past weekend. This article ended, and that's when that graphic was made showing the 45 mass shootings. But wait, there are more, because on Saturday, there were three, four? Saturday, La Place, Louisiana, or is it La Place? Six people were injured after someone opened fire during a 12-year-old's birthday party. Sheriff's office found multiple people shot when they responded to the scene. Saturday, April 17th, Omaha, Nebraska, a 21-year-old was killed at a shooting at a mall. April 17th in Columbus, Ohio, one person was killed and five others, including a 12-year-old, were wounded by gunfire as they attended a vigil for a shooting victim. You see where this is going? One dead and five wounded at this vigil. The group had gathered in the parking lot of a Dollar General to remember a young man who was murdered at that very store a year earlier. And then Sunday, there's more. Yesterday, a shooting at a tavern in southeast Wisconsin, Kenosha, left three people dead and three others wounded. And also yesterday in Austin, Texas, at least three people were killed in a shooting there. Police described the incident as an isolated, quote, domestic situation. It doesn't end. Authorities identified the suspect, a 41-year-old man, a former Travis County Sheriff's Office detective who was charged last year with sexual assault of a child. And so there were two victims, and the suspect was on the loose until earlier today when they finally caught and arrested him. And I'm sure between the time, between last night when this shooting happened in Austin, Texas, and now, I wouldn't doubt that there are more, because this is where we are. This is life in America. But wait, there's more, because there's another part to this story. Both sides have now rested. Hold on, I'm going to pull up the video from the Derek Chauvin murder trial, where today they were giving closing arguments. The prosecution went first. They did theirs in about an hour. Then it was the defense turn, and they, oh my God, that Nelson guy went on and on and on, and the judge finally had to interrupt him to say, we need to take lunch. So he went for about 3 hours total, I'm guessing, and then the prosecution got to rebut, and now the jury has it. So you may be thinking, well, do we... these mass shootings are horrific and all that, but, you know, this was not a mass shooting. This was a police officer who's guilty of the other part of our gun or violence epidemic here in this country, and that is police violence. And let me put this in perspective for you. Since testimony began in this trial just 2 weeks ago, March 29th, more than three people a day have died at the hands of law enforcement. It's not three each day, but it comes out to about three a day. Let me read to you from the New York Times. Just 7 hours before prosecutors opened their case against Derek Chauvin, a Chicago officer, and you know this, chased down a 13-year-old boy in a West Side alley and fatally shot him as he turned with his hands up. That, we all have come to know, is, and I'm going to blank on his name right now. It'll come to me, because there are so many of them and they all get sort of mushed together. But let me keep going, because it'll show up in this article. One day later, at a hotel in Jacksonville, Florida, officers fatally shot a 32-year-old man who police say grabbed one of their tasers. The day after that, as an eyewitness to Mr. Floyd's death broke down in a Minneapolis courtroom while recounting what he saw, a 40-year-old mentally ill man who said he was being harassed by voices was killed in Claremont, New Hampshire, in a shootout with state police. On every day that followed, all the way through the close of testimony, another person was killed by the police somewhere in the United States. That makes 64 people. Since testimony began 2 weeks ago today, at least 64 people have died at the hands of law enforcement nationwide, with Black and Latino people representing more than half of the dead. As of Saturday, the average was more than three killings a day. This is unacceptable. This is reprehensible. This is sickening. Where do we live? What the hell is going on? I sound like William Shatner. Why are they doing this? What are we doing here? When is this shit going to end? I just don't get it. And by the way, I watched a lot of the closing arguments today. The prosecution, as usual for the last 2 weeks, has done a great job. The defense, this Nelson guy, is just a bad joke. I guess he had to do something. I mean, everybody deserves a defense, as Jack Rice will tell us. Yes, Jack, I hope, is going to join us again in a few minutes. Jack Rice, who has been with us since the beginning, he's, you know, Jack Rice is an old Air America radio colleague of mine. But he's a real Renaissance man. I mean, he's been a CIA officer. He has been a prosecutor. He's been a defense attorney. He's been a foreign correspondent. He's been a radio talk show host. And last week, we didn't have Jack Rice on with us because he had a trial. He had a trial. He was defending somebody. It went to the jury late Friday evening. So he's pretty sure we're going to be okay to talk today. He's supposed to join us any minute now. So I'm keeping an eye on the Zoom room so that we can bring him in. But oh my goodness. I watched much of this trial. And again, my husband has seen almost every moment of it. I don't see how this cop walks, except the way our legal system works or doesn't is that all it takes is one. All they have to do is plant reasonable doubt in the minds of one of the 12 jurors, and it's a hung jury. Now, no way Chauvin walks. He's guilty as sin. He's guilty as anything. But you know, there are a lot of people out there who do not want to convict cops. I believe we need to retrain every police officer in this country. Everyone, and maybe you have to stagger it so, you know, we're not all without law enforcement anywhere in the country. But it's got to be done in every police force in the nation. Everybody needs to be psychologically screened and retrained, and maybe rehired, where they all have to apply for their jobs again, because what's happening now is not working. This is not how it's supposed to be. All right, I'm guessing that Jack Rice will be here with us in just a couple of minutes. He should be. Please, Jack, come on. I was going to play something. No, I can't. Oh, there it is. So we'll wait for Jack. I'll tell you what, we'll do a quick, we'll take care of some business. We'll take a quick time out and come back in just a couple of moments with Jack's expert analysis of the trial. I'm wondering how long the jury's going to be out. For me, it's like they should be back already with a guilty verdict. We'll talk to Jack Rice in a moment. I hope. Stick around. We'll be right back. All right. Well, Progressive Voices is in ads. I'm going to give you one more pitch. I've been busy this weekend painting. You know me. I do my pet portraits. And I've gotten quite a few commissions of late because Mother's Day is only a few weeks away. And there is time, should you care, to get a portrait painted of maybe your mom's favorite pet. Here's a kitty I just did. Showing on the screen. And here's another one. This one actually is a Mother's Day gift. So hopefully Harry's mom doesn't watch the show. That's Harry the cat. This is one I just did. It was a gift for the mom of the dog. This is Alfred. That's the photo and that's the picture. So let me run a little, if I can, if it'll let me. My video ad doesn't. Oh, there it goes. I'll run this and then we'll come back and hopefully Jack Rice will be here. And if not, we'll figure something else out. But is it, get ready for Mother's Day, everybody. Here we go.
And maybe rehired.
Whoops.
They all have to.
Oh, no. I've got the wrong thing up here. Let's do this first. Oh, I see. And I need to turn that down. There's paintings. There we go. No, that's still not working. All right. Oh, I know. Okay. Eventually, you'll have audio here.
Quickly moved up to acrylics, and I started my creative exploration. I surprised myself with a few random paintings, and finally, when someone asked if I'd paint her cat, I thought, I'll try. I'd never done it before, but I said I'd give it a shot, and here's the result, Buddy. I posted Buddy's before and after photo online, and another friend asked if I'd paint her dog, Char. I made no promises again, but tried, and surprised us all. Well, it's now April of 2021. I've been fiddling with my acrylics for about 6 months. I still paint random pictures, but my favorite subjects are pets. Mother's Day is right around the corner, and Father's Day soon after that. Now is the perfect time to commission a pet portrait for the mother or father in your life. Custom pet portraits for human pet parents. For more information, visit NicoleSandler.com/pandemic-painting or shoot me an email. Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Give the mothers and fathers in your life the most special gift imaginable, a custom pet portrait painted by me. It's the gift that'll last a lifetime.
Our right to vote is under attack.
More than 100 bills have been put forward in state legislatures to try to claw back voting rights.
A bill was introduced to stop these attacks and protect voting rights. But now, with Senate Republicans threatening to block it, Democrats face a choice.
If all this takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, then that's what we should do.
Tell your senator, protect our democracy, not the Jim Crow filibuster. Our right to vote is under attack.
More than 100 bills have been put forward in state legislatures to try to claw back voting rights.
We did this already.
A bill was introduced to stop these attacks.
All right. Hold on. Oh, no. Hold on. I screwed up. I forgot to send Jack Rice the link. So bear with me 1 second. I got to give Jack the link to get into Zoom. It would help, you know. I guess he can't come on if I don't link him in. So let me do that. Let me put it. Oh, my goodness. best laid plans and all that. I actually even had spare time today and I still didn't do this. You know what? It's going to be easier to just put it here. Damn it. Jack Rice. Hold on, Jack Rice. Damn it. Oh, I hate it when I screw up. Give me 1 second. Okay, Jack Rice, I'm coming at you. Give me 1 second. Here it is. Ah! All right. So anyway, Jack Rice, again, is a criminal defense attorney. He will be joining us any second now since I finally sent him the link. Damn. I hate when I do that. So we're back. So right now the jury has the case. I don't know the exact terminology, but the case has gone to the jury and they have begun deliberation. So as soon as Jack Rice joins us in the chat, I should look at I should look at Facebook and see if any comments in here, any questions I have to answer. Mexico is sounding better and better, even with the cartels. Okay, glad my life is boring. Yes, I'm upset about all this as well. Let's see. Sandy's there. Environmental Coffee House. You should go check that out. Still waiting for Jack Rice. Hopefully he got the link. What else can I share with you? While we're waiting for Jack, I guess I can tell you about some other stuff going on. And it's not good. You know, there's been since the shooting in Brooklyn Center, not only protests every night that have gotten more and more out of control, but let me just read this to you. The police in Minnesota are harassing, roughing up, and arresting journalists as well. Yeah. And most disturbingly, on the 13th, so it was last week, a Carolyn Sung is a CNN producer who happens to be Asian American. Let me read from the exact report about what happened to her. She was thrown to the ground and arrested by state troopers. This was Tuesday night while trying to comply with a dispersal order. As she tried to leave the area as directed, troopers grabbed her by her backpack and threw her to the ground, zip-tying her hands behind her back. She did not resist and repeatedly identified herself as a journalist working for CNN, and she showed her credentials. A male security agent was briefly detained. He was working with her, like protecting her during the protest. When he showed his credentials, they let him go. But they didn't release her. And despite repeatedly hearing her identify herself as the member of the press and tell the troopers that the zip ties were too tight on her wrists, one trooper yelled at her, "Do you speak English?" She's Asian American. Her primary language is English. She was placed in a paddy wagon and sent to the Hennepin County Jail, where she was patted down, searched by a female officer who put her hands down her pants and in her bra. She was fingerprinted, electronically body scanned in order to strip and put on an orange uniform before attorneys working on her behalf were able to locate her and secure her release. What the hell is going on in this country? Again, I'm just blown away. I'm just completely perplexed by all of this. All right, I gotta find where Jack is. Check your email. Okay, I have to check my email. Maybe there's an email from Jack. This is when I really do need a producer. You know, when I'm flailing like this. Okay, hold on one second. Check my email. Let's see. Oh, that's like way back. And there's Jack Rice. Okay, hold on. Let's bring Jack in. And Jack Rice, I'm so sorry. Why is there audio coming back through there? This happens like every goddamn time. I got to figure out why, where this is coming from. You know, I'm going to close all of this and bring Jack in and see. Hopefully, it's still coming back at me. Where is it coming from? Not from there. Jack Rice, why do I have audio coming back through? Oh, I know. I got it now. Okay, now we can bring Jack Rice in. And there you are. Sorry about that. Yeah. Best laid plans and all that stuff. Hey, Jack Rice, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to join you today.
Oh, God. So the jury has the case. The Chauvin trial is now with the jury. I watched much of the closing arguments today. And boy, the defense, Nelson, he was really flailing, wasn't he?
Yeah. This has been a really brutal month and a half for the defense in this case. But let's face it, you're talking about a 9 minute and 29 second videotape that is absolutely horrendous. And no matter how you put it, no matter how you shine this up, you're sometimes stuck with the evidence that you have. In addition to that, what we also had were some very, very compelling technical witness, doctors, experts. And on top of that, some incredibly emotional, but legitimately emotional and connecting witnesses, including eyewitnesses, including his girlfriend, including his younger brother. You combine all three of those, and I'm not particularly shocked. That's a pretty tough job for any one person to do by themselves with that many people lined up against you.
Yeah. And was it unusual that it was just the one defense attorney? I mean, usually it seems like on a case this big, there's a few that they share the responsibilities. I know there was somebody else sitting at the table behind them, but it was just Nelson doing all the work, it seemed.
Well, actually, yeah, you're right. And in fact, that was a clerk. That wasn't another lawyer.
Wow.
So if you realize this is one guy. Now, contemplate this. We're talking about four lawyers on the attorney general's side that were in the room. So let's be clear. There were probably another 10 or more who were also working that case.
So right.
Kind of astounding to me that you would have just one person actually dealing with a case like this. I mean, if you look back, and I don't need to make the comparison, but if you look back at the O.J. Simpson trial, you realize that you just brought in a Barry Scheck to deal with DNA. Right. I realized that Barry Scheck wasn't a name at the time.
Right. But he is now.
It was.
Right.
You know, you brought in one guy to do just the DNA. That's all he did. You brought in F. Lee Bailey to do cross on just one kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you realize what that means. And to have one person have to get up every day to pound away at witnesses, to prepare the next night, and to come back and do it again day after day after day. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And yet you have to sprint every single day.
Right. Jack, I've got a question for you from a listener who posted it on Facebook. Julie Strove writes, Jack, I watched some live stream of the prosecution closing argument. It seemed to me like a rehash of facts and rebuttal. If I were a prosecutor, I'd tell a story in closing. I like Blackwell. He's very good. But what's your take on the substance of the closing arguments? And Nelson, for the defense, seemed to be all about tit for tat. How does that sit with the jury?
You know what? I love the questions, and I love them for this reason, because I think you're right. If it were me, and I hate to be, you know, armchair quarterbacking this and criticizing anybody because I'm not in the room. I haven't been beaten up for the last month and a half on this trial. But what I can tell you is that people make decisions based upon visceral gut reaction, and telling a compelling story is how you drive people to make decisions. Now, imagine if you had started, let's imagine if I were prosecuting this case and I said, Derek Chauvin is a man who decided to hide behind a uniform so he could kill somebody in the streets. And he cared so much about it that he picked the gravel out of the tires when he did it. Period.
Okay.
Now, that is a brutal opening statement.
Yeah.
And this is about, is dare I say this, grabbing a jury, holding on to them, and forcing them to do what you want them to do. If what you do is do a long 2.5 hour diatribe about law and about elements and about statistics, what you're going to get is a jury that's already exhausted, being even more so. The defense, on the other hand, they don't have to do a tit for tat. What the defense has to do in a case like this is say, this is about one thing. This is about causation and causation alone. And you can be really specific about this and say, what killed George Floyd? You have experts on both sides saying two different things.
Right.
You may like them, you may hate them, but here's what we know. The problem is you don't have to beat the prosecution at their own game. What you have to do is poke one particularly devastating hole. And then you step back and say, guess what? The judge has ordered you to apply the law. And in this case, the government fails because what they didn't prove was this singular point. And that's why they are wrong. You don't beat on them one piece at a time and follow what they claim. You fight your own fight. You do your own game. You do what you do best. 2.5 hours is something you should never do in a closing. I don't care who you are.
Right.
It's a simple question.
Right.
It's a simple question. He died in the street, and he died in the street under the knee of a man, and he did it on purpose.
Right. Well, and you know, the prosecution didn't do a 2.5 hour closing. I thought they were concise. They laid out the facts. But the defense, what?
2 hours. No. Prosecution's was 2 hours long.
Was it? Okay.
Oh, my God. Theirs was long, too. They spent all of this time talking elements when what they really could have been talking about was telling a compelling story of why one man shouldn't die at the hands of a police officer in the streets of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's what drives people. That's what people think about when they think about this case.
Sure. Right. So now, Jack, the jury is sequestered. We were wrong. They weren't sequestered before. And in fact, when the shooting happened at Brooklyn Center last week, oh, my God, I think it was the defense asked for the jury to be sequestered because of all the news coverage and the protests and everything. And the judge said no. What do you think? That was smart? I mean, what is your thoughts on this other incident happening during this trial?
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you what, Nicole, I appreciate the question because, you know, I'm a former prosecutor. I'm a former U.S. federal agent. I've been a criminal defense attorney for a long time. And I'm just thinking about this from a due process standpoint. There is no way in hell that Derek Chauvin got a fair trial here.
Really?
I mean, there's no way because, first of all, they pick a half a dozen jurors and then the city of Minneapolis negotiates an agreement.
Right. The settlement. Right.
So, in other words, you haven't even told those jurors to stay away from everything else yet. So, in other words, they actually are tainted on the front end in the middle of jury selection. And then what we have is the murder of Dante Wright.
Yep.
In downtown Minneapolis or just north of Minneapolis at the very same time by another white police officer. And you sit back and you think, is Minneapolis going to explode on the back end of this trial if jurors
don't make the
quote unquote right decision?
Yeah.
How is it that anybody could give this guy a fair trial when they all know and they're petrified that if it doesn't go the right way, Minneapolis is going to burn?
Now, right.
That is a brutal scenario.
So right there, is that grounds for appeal? I mean, say, you know, Chauvin is found guilty, which I think he should be on all counts. But right there, between the settlement announced during the trial, you know, before they even started taking testimony, but after the jury was chosen, or most of them anyway, and then this other police killing of another, young black man.
Unarmed.
Right.
Unarmed.
Right. For a ridiculous reason. I mean, oh, my God. He was pulled over because he had a, depending on who you're listening to, expired tags, which couldn't be because it was a brand new car that his mother just bought him. And he had an air freshener thing hanging from the rearview mirror, which apparently is illegal in your state. And you can be pulled over for that. That's why he thought he was being pulled over. I don't care what warrants were out on him. That is not a death penalty crime. That there's no reason for that young man to be dead right now, and that happened during this trial. And it did.
You know, and as to that point, I mean, realistically, I can tell you that the Minnesota Court of Appeals, the Minnesota Supreme Court, they generally will not overturn jury verdicts because of outside influence unless you can tie it directly to that jury's decision to convict. And that's a very nebulous thing, a very hard thing to do. But I have to tell you what you brought up about Dante Wright, and this is a little off topic, but let's go with it, is that it's extraordinary. I mean, I've been in the middle of a jury trial of my own for the last week and a half.
Right. I explained. That's why you weren't here at all last week, because you had a big trial. Right.
Yeah, it was brutal. And yet at the same time, I have been doing media in Australia and in London and in Tokyo, South Asia, across the United States. And the thing is I've had people not around the world, but several people in the United States ask me, and they would say point blank, if Dante Wright had listened to the police, would he be dead? And my response is, let me ask this question. If I don't listen to a police officer and do exactly what he says or she says, does she have the right to murder me in the street?
No.
Well, my response is, if they're going to ask that question, then my response is, then they better be prepared for a whole lot of people to die. Because if I didn't hear what the officer said, if I misunderstood what the officer said, then guess what? I guess the officer's allowed to kill me, too. Of course, they're not going to kill me because I don't look like Dante Wright.
Right.
People like me, generally speaking, don't die in the street. There's a whole bunch of other people who do. And they've been doing it for a lot of years. And we know that's true.
Wow. So is there any way, Jack Rice, to tell how long a jury is going to be out? I mean, to me, it seems, you know, cut and dry. It's like easy, no brainer. I'd already be back. But it doesn't work that way. Do they have to go through all the thing? Or what happens when they go into the jury room? Do they first take a vote or do they start talking about what just happened?
Well, I can tell you this is how it works. And the problem is nobody really knows sort of how long something like this will take. I had a jury out just for the last 2 days, and they just came back.
Oh, they did.
And in that case, this is how it works, and generally how it works. The first thing that a jury does when they start to deliberate is they pick a captain, they pick a leader, mm-hmm. and that leader is really designed to sort of keep everybody on the tracks, to make sure that nobody goes into a ditch, and they sort of keep everything moving forward. So they try to find somebody who can do that. Then what they will do is sometimes they will take kind of a straw vote. They will kind of say, okay, just roughly, do you think he did this? Do you think he did that? But nobody has to be held to it. Then what they will do is they will then generally start looking at the evidence and start looking at it, and it's count by count. So every count stands alone. Mm. And so that will happen, and that can take time. Right. Because then you start saying, okay, this witness said this, this witness said that. Does this cut in its favor? Does it cut against? And you think about what the burden is, and it's always proof beyond a reasonable doubt, presumption of innocence. The state has the absolute burden. You have to convince an entire jury. So it's all 12, right? Then what they will do is they will sometimes come back and say, now, is there something missing or something we need to clarify? So in other words, In my case this morning, the jury wanted to talk to a judge, and they had questions specifically as it comes to definitions, uh-huh. as it comes to videotapes, as it comes to something else that they might want to see. And so they will say, can you tell us what the definition of X is? And the problem is that what we saw this morning from Judge Cahill is that Judge Cahill actually laid out a set of rules. They're called JIGs in Minnesota, Jury Instruction Guide. And it lays out that presumption of innocence, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, those sorts of things. But it also lays out the elements that the state must prove when you're charging somebody with second degree unintentional murder, third degree murder, and manslaughter. And it even defines certain charges or certain crimes or certain things that a jury needs to see. So what they have to do is read through that, understand it, look at each of those charges, split them apart, think about the evidence they have. If there's something about that evidence, then they can look at it. A lot of that evidence they get to take back with them, mm-hmm. but usually what they don't get is this, is they're not going to get any of those videotapes.
Oh,
because in Minnesota, what happens is this, is that what they will do is that you can watch the videotape and you can even have a transcript. And they did in these cases. They would hand out transcripts to all the jurors so they can actually read along. And the transcript isn't actually evidence, but it kind of helps them follow.
Sure.
And they can't take the transcripts into the jury room with them to deliberate. And if they want to watch a video again, they actually have to come back into the courtroom, watch that entire videotape, and then go back and deliberate some more. So this whole process can take a very long time.
Right. But then there's the other part of it is they're sequestered. Obviously, they're going to want to get home. But I'm sure they feel the pressure of the world sitting on their shoulders right now, because they were not sequestered. They have to know that Dante Wright was killed. They have to know that every night there have been protests that somehow have, been less friendly than others, that it's spreading, you know, around the country. What they probably don't know is what I opened the show with today, that since testimony began in this trial 2 weeks ago today, 64 Americans have died at the hands of police in this country. It comes out to 3 a day.
Yeah. Yeah. The numbers have been astounding. You can take a look at the mass shootings that we saw in Austin.
I went through the whole list. I went through the first half of the show. That's all it was. I read through a list of 50 mass shootings that have occurred since March 16th, since Atlanta.
Yeah. And guess what? We're not even getting a blink from members of Congress.
Yeah. Nothing.
Now, there will be some who will be outraged, I'm sure. And the answer is nothing. We will see a big goose egg. It is extraordinary, is it not, that we have 6 people die from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine,
right.
Which, by the way, is a horrible thing.
It is a horrible thing, but no, 6 people didn't die, Jack. 6 people got blood clots. One died. There was one death.
So six people get sick, one person dies out of 7 million vaccines.
Right, and they shut the whole thing down.
And the world is coming to an end.
Right.
And we want to make sure, I think it's important that we're safe. I agree with it completely.
Yep.
And yet we just keep burying and burying little kids.
It's amazing.
And that apparently is an assault on the Constitution of the United States, not an assault on a baby.
Right. So yeah. I pulled out my little pocket Constitution and again read the Second Amendment. Not that I don't know it by heart, but just so I didn't get anything wrong. What is the question here? Six people got sick from a vaccine out of 8 million, 7 million, and one died, and the whole thing is shut down and everyone's freaking out.
Right.
And yet 64 people have died in the last 2 weeks at the hands of the people who are supposed to be protecting them.
Well, I can tell you here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, there have been multiple days where we had lockdown this last week. And so what they were doing is it was typically 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
They were locking down both cities out of fear of what would happen.
Wow.
There were more than 1,100 police officers in the Twin Cities, brought in additional officers out of fear of what might happen. There were some 2,000 Minnesota National Guard who were here. And I can say that absolutely, because just down the street from me, over at the shopping center, you know, if you're going to the grocery store, I saw dozens and dozens of soldiers with M4s. And there they were. And it's one of those things when you sit back and I think about this sort of in the context of my previous life, if you will, where I've spent a lot of time in war zones. And I sat there scratching my head, looking at these kids who are about a third of my age.
Right.
And I thought to myself, boy, what is going on? Yeah, I don't know. Am I getting old? Maybe.
Well, we are, but I don't recognize this place. Seeing militarized police on the streets of any town USA, and they're mobilizing now in preparation for this verdict. Because they're afraid, if God forbid Chauvin gets off, what's going to happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it cuts a lot of ways. I mean, I think about it sort of like this, is that in this country, it's important that we get to articulate how we feel. I mean, my daughter walked out of her high school today.
Oh.
And that group of students walked down the street in St. Paul, and they walked straight up to the Capitol, and she was right up against the front of the fences.
Wow.
And there she was. And I have to tell you, I'm shockingly proud of her.
Of course.
Because from my perspective, I don't care if we agree or disagree, she and I. My attitude is that if she wants to be out there and this is what she feels she needs to do and is compelled to do, mm-hmm. based upon what she sees happening in this country, damn it, this is hers too. And so I'm thrilled with that idea. And I'm hoping that civilians and military and police will recognize the distinction. But understand, there had to be an order that was just signed by a federal judge this last week. And it was signed that basically compelled and ordered the police to stop attacking journalists in the Twin Cities.
I was talking about that as well. The CNN reporter?
An order that had to be signed. It was signed by federal judge Wilhelmina Mimi Wright, who I know very well, when she was on the Supreme Court here and even a district court judge in St. Paul. And I've known her for many years. The idea that we actually have to have orders signed by judges because that actually has to be said.
Right.
As if somehow we didn't recognize it. Maybe that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But there we are. This is Minnesota. This is America. It's 2021. Welcome to the Thunderdome.
Yeah, no kidding. And now we wait on pins and needles because and I feel like we've seen this movie before. Again, I'm transported back 30 years now almost to the Rodney King trial. I remember waiting for that verdict to come in. And when we knew the verdict was coming, sitting in my office at KLOS, which was right on La Cienega Boulevard, and my friend Rhonda, who was a salesperson, was in my office. We were smoking a cigarette back in the day. And the radio says, verdict on the Rodney King case. And we're like, oh, shit. And when they announced it, we're just like, oh, my God, this city's going to burn. And sure enough, it did. I'll never forget that. And how frightening it was. This is almost 30 years later, we've learned nothing. Nothing has gotten better. It's only gotten worse. And shame on us for that.
What we can say for sure right now is that 38th in Chicago, that's where George Floyd died. South Minneapolis. And this is not just a South Minneapolis question. This is a North Minneapolis question, a South Minneapolis question, a St. Paul question. But it's not just there. I was just on in Charlotte. Charlotte's concerned about what's going to happen today.
I'm sure.
What this might mean in the coming days. New York, they're concerned about what might happen. Los Angeles
Everybody.
Is concerned. And I think the problem that I see from this trial, and this really hasn't received much play, and it really should from my perspective, is that what we saw from the prosecution is they had some very effective witnesses. They truly did, including some very senior officers and some chief of police where they talked about culture. And they talked about the culture of the Minneapolis Police Department and that we were not what Derek Chauvin is. The problem with that is they are.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I can tell you. I mean, I was a public defender in Minneapolis. I watched what was going on, and I watched how the police department, I recall years ago, one of the first big payouts they played was when they stopped a quote-unquote drunk Indian. Their response was to throw him in the trunk of the squad car, drive him away, and then push him out later. That's how it started.
Oh my God.
And that has never really ended. And so we have seen again and again and again where the Minneapolis Police Department has paid out millions and millions and millions of dollars. They have had complaint after complaint after complaint. And the problem that I see is the chief of police, senior officers, talking about this somehow pie in the sky concept of what they are as a department that simply does not reflect reality. And the worst part of this, and this is the part that I think is what people should be afraid of, is that what they did is they made the standard argument that we have been seeing from police departments and right-wing supremacists and many others who will say one bad apple. It wasn't a systemic problem.
God.
One guy.
Right.
And that's what they argued in this case, too. And so what you saw was that being rolled out. And nobody stood up and said, dare I say this, I'm calling bullshit.
Right.
Nobody was willing. And not even the defense really came back swinging with both fists and said, wait a second, let's talk about what this department is. Let's talk about what the police have done in this country for 400 years.
Yeah.
Instead, the answer was, oh, he's not that bad, which misses the point completely. That's, by the way, and that is the reason that we're seeing such anger in the streets, because if anybody understands that, it will be people who have been in the crosshairs of it for their entire lives. And their response was when they saw this chief of police say, this isn't our culture, they were laughing and crying at the same time.
Right.
As they should.
God. Jack Rice, I really fear for us, because there's no good outcome for this. I'm afraid, you know, I'm afraid of what happens if he gets off on any counts. Because number one, he doesn't deserve to, but number two, it doesn't fix the underlying problem. We still have this problem. The same people that trained Derek Chauvin trained other cops. And there are similar issues. What I said earlier in the program, and I firmly believe it, is, you know, I'm not big on the defund the police or abolish the police. We need law enforcement. They just need to be completely retrained. Everyone, I believe every single police officer in this country needs to undergo a psychiatric evaluation and needs to undergo new training. And maybe they all need to be fired and reapply for their jobs with new criteria. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but we're certainly not there. We're broken.
Yeah. Well, we're also looking at the warrior ethos that we have seen, where we get to dress up like ninjas and sort of stomp around looking like we're soldiers fighting wars, rather than addressing and trying to deal with problems with civilians. And we seem to have embraced that idea And we saw this after 9/11, where enormous amounts of money was dropped on these departments in places like Cheyenne, Wyoming, where all of a sudden you're saying, yeah, we need to be prepared in case Al-Qaeda drops into Cheyenne. I'm pretty sure Cheyenne's okay.
Right.
And that problem has simply exacerbated what many of these officers have done. There are good officers, but mm-hmm. the problem is good officers die on the vine if you have a problem that is systemic that strangles them out. They may survive, but what they turn into is something else. Those who don't simply leave. And there are good officers out there. I know it personally. But how do you survive in a system where you're the bad apple?
Right. Oh, God. If I believed in God, I'd say, God help us. Right now, I have to say universe. You know, hopefully there's some collective power and we get through this. Seeing how many people have been killed in the last month alone by gun violence, random gun violence, people with guns who shouldn't have them shooting up the place, and how many people have been killed by cop. I really worry for this country. I don't know what
20,000 dead last year, more than 600 mass shootings last year, 430, I think, in 2019. The numbers are in excess of 150 of those shootings have taken place already in 2021.
Yep.
Already.
Yep.
We're not even through April yet.
No.
And if we recognize where we are and people aren't even flinching right now, I think maybe that is the worst part of all of this, is we just see it and say, well, you know, another day in America. Good morning.
Lucky us. Jack Rice, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your input and taking us through this.
I am just a ray of sunshine.
Well, you know, welcome to the party. Hey, you should listen to the first half hour of the show if you really want to be depressed. Seriously, I ran through 50 mass shootings and 64 people killed by cop before we got to you. So, yeah. Nice. Happy Monday.
Set them up for me.
Oh, yes.
Well, then I stepped into the right room. I am here for you anytime
there you
need
go.
Me.
Thank you so much. And I guess now we wait for the verdict, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jack. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
All right. That's it for us. I'm going to leave you with today's What's News because we can. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
There are a number of legitimate news stories I would have led with today, but instead I have to talk about guns and mass shootings in America. This was a devastating, heartbreaking, and sickening weekend filled with gun violence. Three people were killed and three injured in a shooting at a Kenosha, Wisconsin bar. A person of interest has been located and is facing a charge. In Austin, Texas, three more people were killed after an apparent domestic situation. And it turns out the suspect, now identified by police as an ex-sheriff's deputy, who spent 16 days in jail last June before posting $50,000 bail after being charged with sexual assault of a child, is still on the run. Great. And in Columbus, Ohio, one person was killed and five wounded in a drive-by shooting at a vigil for a gun violence victim. And there were more, like six people shot at a 12-year-old's birthday party Saturday just outside of New Orleans. No arrests have been made yet, and as no one was killed, that shooting gets barely a blip on the newsometer. But here we are. The United States has recorded at least 50 mass shootings since the Atlanta area spa shootings on March 16th, which left eight people dead. We're also learning more about last week's shooting in Indianapolis, in which police say a 19-year-old killed eight people at a FedEx facility. That suspect legally bought the two assault rifles he used in the attack after he'd been investigated by the FBI due to his potential for violence. And that attack in Indianapolis follows a former NFL player fatally shooting and killing six people in Rock Hill, South Carolina on April 7th before he turned the gun on himself, as well as a third gunman killing four people and critically wounding a fifth
at a Southern California office building on March 31st. Oh, and just before that, a fourth gunman killed 10 people at a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado on March 22nd. Have we had enough yet? And of course, all these shootings happen under the backdrop of the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin over the death of George Floyd. Well, on Monday, the trial moves into closing arguments. 45 witnesses testified in the two-week trial over whether Chauvin caused Floyd's death by pressing his knee into the unarmed black man's neck for over 9 minutes. Chauvin's lawyers argued that Floyd, who was detained last year on suspicion of using a counterfeit $20 bill to buy cigarettes at a convenience store, died from underlying health problems and drug use. Once both sides present their closings, the judge will present the jury instructions, and it's off to sequestration until they reach a verdict. Minneapolis and other U.S. cities are preparing for possible protests in the aftermath. Unrest is already happening in other communities as they process their own police violence tragedies, as in Chicago, where Mayor Lori Lightfoot is facing growing calls for police reform after body cam footage was released showing the deadly police shooting of Adam Toledo, a 13-year-old boy. At least 100 people have already been arrested in protests in nearby Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, following the police shooting and killing of 20-year-old Dante Wright. And the protests are getting ugly, with police reportedly harassing and mistreating journalists. In fact, the governor of Minnesota Sunday night addressed a few incidents. And once again, police don't seem to understand that the press has a First Amendment right to be there to cover protests. Last Monday, two separate New York Times photojournalists were harassed by Minneapolis police. In the first one, a Minneapolis State Patrol captain recognized the photojournalist, rushed out of a police line, and grabbed him. The officer then pulled the journalist behind the line, where another officer held his hands behind his back and took his phone. When the journalist asked why, the officer replied, quote, "Because that's our strategy now." That same night, a separate journalist was at the Brooklyn Center Police Department when an officer used a chemical irritant against a protester standing right next to the journalist. The officer then reportedly lunged forward and aimed the spray directly at the journalist from a distance of approximately 4 to 5 feet. Fortunately, the journalist was wearing a gas mask, but the irritant still burned a red ring around his face and damaged his camera. The following day, April 13th, a CNN Asian American producer, Carolyn Sung, was thrown to the ground and arrested by state troopers. This while she was trying to comply with a dispersal order. As Sung tried to leave the area as directed, troopers grabbed her by her backpack and threw her to the ground, zip-tying her hands behind her back. Sung did not resist and repeatedly identified herself as a journalist working for CNN and showed her credentials. Despite repeatedly hearing Sung identify herself as a member of the press and telling the troopers that the zip ties were too tight on her wrists, one trooper yelled at Sung, quote, "Do you speak English?" Sung, whose primary language is English, was sent to the Hennepin County Jail, where she was patted down and searched by a female officer who put her hands down Sung's pants and in her bra, fingerprinted, electronically body scanned, and ordered to strip and put on an orange uniform before attorneys working on her behalf were able to locate her and get her released, a process that took more than 2 hours. Moving right along, almost 130 million people 18 or older, or just over half of the adults in the U.S., have been injected with at least one dose of a coronavirus vaccine. This according to the Centers for Disease Control. In all, 50.4% of the adult population has received one shot, and 32.5% have been fully vaccinated. Now the federal government has to convince those who are skeptical of a vaccine. By the way, the U.S. vaccination rate is 61.6 doses administered per 100 people. And with that, we fall behind Israel, who leads the world, as well as the UAE, Chile, and the United Kingdom. And as of today, all Americans 16 years and older are eligible for the vaccine. It doesn't matter what state you live in. If you're 16 or older, you can now get in line.
So go do it. I got the
news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.